Outside the Panels. This is our first episode of Simon Spurrier, which we're super excited to dive into. As always, I'm Poet Hare, also known as Michael, and joining me as always is...
Chaz, also known as Chaz.
And Jack, also known as Synesthetic. Or Chaz.
Damn it, there's two of us.
So this was my pick, and I realized something, that most of my favorite writers are all British. I realized that just this month. Like, I looked at, like, my top 20 writers, and there's, like, 18 British guys. And I was like, wow, I really like the British sensibility of writing. But I love Cy Spurrier. I'm excited to get into his work. I think he's really smart with his writing. We're going to get to his Dreaming Run originally, which I think is a fantastic follow-up to Gaiman's Sandman Run, which is definitely really hard shoes to fill. But he does a great job of kind of picking up the original story and then doing something completely different with characters he created. And he's just really good at creating worlds, which is our first book we're going to be covering today is Godshaper, which he kind of takes the spirit of a counterculture tale and kind of mixes it with like the like basics of, like Chaz brought up before we were recording, with the basics of his Dark Materials, because it's set in a world where like all electricity died. And a bunch of stuff that we know normal no longer exists, but every normal human has a little spirit with them that's called a god. And then people that don't have spirits with them are called shapers. And they also have abilities. They can kind of change the god's appearance and change the god's abilities, but they're all basically hobos, buskers that travel from town to town because they can't have money. And they're kind of, you know, judged because they're traveling hobos. But I've read this book a few times. It was, I don't know if... Chaz, have you read it before or no?
I read a few issues of it when it was coming out, and then this was my first time finishing it, was this read.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty interesting. I know, Jack, it was your first time. Did you dig it?
I thought it was pretty sick. Like I was saying to you guys before, it like weirdly reminded me of Neopets, which is not a bad thing. It was hard for me to understand why, like, they treated shapers like shit and like fucked them over all the time just because, but they like need them. They like can't really survive without them. I guess it's just because they're like a minority and people tend to treat minorities like shit. I don't know.
Yeah. I was thinking it was either that or there's another ability the shapers all share that regular people don't. And that's that they can't be harmed by these, I mean, they can be hurt by these gods, but like they can reach in and stop these gods from doing what they do. Yeah, they basically have immunity from the only real like justice that world has, the like Vespers sort of vibe. Like they're not going to be harmed by other people's gods.
And they're total like bohemians. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're totally traveling hobos. They remind me of buskers. I mean, he always got his guitar case. And then he does play at clubs. It's not like he's playing for money, though, but he's basically... But he doesn't... How they're so not connected to money, even when he does, like... When he does it, Mr. Bogan, I think that's his name, the guy he tries to help in the beginning, and he doesn't even get paid for that. He just gets new clothes. So, like, they're so not attached to money that they don't even get paid with money.
Yeah, because the new currency is belief. When everybody has a god, you want your god to be the biggest and to be the strongest, so you trade your prayers, your prayer beads.
Beads, yeah, the prayer beads, I forgot.
To the other god. Yeah. And then even one of the big bads refers to being alive in the time before this when there was only one god and he was raised Catholic, and that's why they're called beads, is because of the prayer. So, yeah, since the only currency is belief and these people have the power to shape that belief, they're pariahs. Penniless pariahs.
Yeah, because they could basically change the god to their will depending on how powerful they are. Our main character is named N.A., which at first, but then we find out he has that name because it's for non-applicable, because that's what his parents named him when they found out he was a shaper. And then he has a wandering god with him named Bud, who most gods don't last long without having a person attached to them. But Bud Bud's kind of my favorite character in this.
I was about to say, yeah, I love Bud. I wanted him to be my Bud at the end of this.
He shares a lot with Metal Shark Bro's friend, too. Why can't I think of his name?
Yeah, the hats. He's like always looking for different hats. He's so fucking adorable, man. Hats. I love that guy.
He is.
I want
have a hat or a name. That's it.
He's a little blue glob, and he's super, super cute. I love that when he's Mr. Bog is his name. I love when he's shaping Mr. Bog's god, and then Bud's in his basement stealing shit, like under or in his back room.
Yeah, the scam that these two is running is so good.
I agree. We'll get there. So yeah, NA is kind of like he's a bisexual bohemian that's traveling. He's basically making love to whoever, whenever in the club, and he's following the Cantic group, which the Cantic group is kind of like a revolution of. It's almost reminding me of the Beatnik revolution, which I think that's on purpose because it's Cantic, like the Beatniks, like. They're all about poetry and kind of they go into clubs together and they perform poetry and kind of vibe together. But they still, which is another thing, they still are also judgmental towards shapers, regardless of all their belief of like free love and poetry. They also kind of give the shapers a bad look.
Yeah.
It felt like NA's stage persona for me was Hobo Prince. That was
Hobo Prince. He's got all his makeup and stuff on. That was awesome.
The big speeches. All I could hear
he has to use Bud to to pretend he's human to be able to fit into the scene.
Yeah,
which exactly. Kind of fucked up. He's got to do like that. Like you got to do what you got to do. I mean, he talks about that in the book.
Yeah, and how many people pass in regular religion, right? Like maybe they don't feel it, but like got to put on that show until they're confident enough to express those beliefs.
Yeah, most Christians I know aren't very Christian at all.
Fair. Yeah. That's a whole nother episode, I feel like.
It is. We shouldn't deep dive into religion because
I got
some thoughts. But I do got to say,
I kind of like this book's version of this transactional religion. You know what I mean? The idea that when we all can see our gods, we can use those gods for who knows what, right? Like. That's the best part about this is it's not even that they're always shaped the right way, but they can become certain things. Like there's no technology or bigger technology, right? They lost all electricity, so cars, planes, whatever is all off the table. So now they're being pulled around by their gods in the shape of like big old Flintstone wheels. It's awesome.
Yeah. Is awesome. And it's drawn by Jonas Goonface and lettered by Colin Bell. And yeah, Jonas's art in this is about the artist. It's strangely he's not a big fan of corporations. This is actually one of his last big projects, which I think he does a great job in this. I think it looks good.
Yeah. I thought the art looked awesome. All of the gods are uniquely designed and shaped, which is pretty cool. Not just for the purpose of being god-shaped later by a shaper, but they just look cool. They're implied to have really cool powers. We get to see them have cool powers also. Like
my favorite was like seeing like right off the bat in the opening, that kid goes up to this photographer stand and there's like he's got all these pictures of these like models or actresses. And he's like, so you want the special one? That'll be 300 beads. And he's like, that's half the beads I got. And he's like, all right, I'll do it.
So special?
And the guy's like, all right, here you go. And he's like, he's got x-ray.
X-ray
he's got x-ray eyes. And he like prints a picture out of his mouth. Like it's like the chick.
You could tell that it was like, it was worth the beads too. Cause that kid is just stoked.
Mind blown. He's like, whoa.
We should also mention
no electricity
that after,
so they don't have cell phones.
Yeah, after that big transaction too, the god is noticeably smaller. We like watch it shrink. So not only are the beads a form of currency, but they're actually like the life
regenerative
that these gods have. Like presumably you could
smudged when we meet
give
her.
Them all out and have no god left, right?
Yeah, then you just
I would think so because then with Smudge, which it's funny because Smudge comes in and she kind of gets what NA's doing with Bud because she watches what happens at Bog's place and sees him breaking in, And when she first meets them,
she's awesome.
She basically says, yeah, she is awesome, but she like falls in love with NA, even though the reason she got court-martialed and beat savagely and almost beat to death was because Bud and NA ripped her off her medical rations.
Hey,
she's quick to forgive.
Thankfully.
Love is thankfully. A strange yeah. sensation.
And also, music is the great uniter, I would say. she's sort of won over by NA's musical ability.
That's true, yeah. And she sees him hopeful.
Love.
I would almost say cynical. Like, in a way, NA is so resigned to the Shaper life that even though he gets the sort of outlet in his music and being part of this revolution, every day in regular life he's hiding who he is and what he does, and people only want him around as much as they can use him, which I know from experience
feel that, man.
Feels terrible. Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, that shit sucks. And then you go on stage and you play to an audience of like hundreds and they don't know anything about you, but they're in love with you. And then you got to go back to regular ass life where people are like, well, you fucking suck, but can you make my guy have flames on him? Because that's like the buzz right now is like fucking flames. Priests love flames. Reminds them of hell. It's awesome. I'm going to get hella
beat. I mean, all these rich dudes have like these giant monsters, but I'd want like a little dude like Bud. Like, I just want a little homie. I don't want a giant monster. What the fuck?
Yeah. And Bud even has sweet Jake from Adventure Time like powers. He gets to like turn into suits and fucking giant hands for like
you can like NA put your brain
use,
in
you know
him.
Yeah, like yeah. You get to wear them like a fucking mech, like a power-up item. It's fucking cool.
We shouldn't
shit.
Go too far into that yet though.
That's one of the coolest pages when he wears them as like a mech when NA uses them and he's like literally riding freaking Bud. That scene's awesome.
Yeah,
when he just becomes huge and completely enveloped by him. Yeah. So move on the story
sick.
A little more.
I knew
so
it
the
was
second...
coming at some point, but I didn't expect it at the same time. Like, because they talk
awesome.
About the special move earlier, and that's kind of what I thought it might be. But when it happened, I was like, fuck, dude, that's sick. Because he didn't use it the first time.
Yeah.
No. So he meets Clunch, his like old hobo buddy, and they have a good old hobo beans dinner. With like a fire, and they have sex and have fun, and then he leaves. They are homosexuals, and then he has a young girl shaper that he basically just leaves on NA, and that's before he does a bunch of clenches. One of those characters does a bunch of effed up shit, and then at the end he's like, "I'm still good. You didn't know,
hey man, you gotta watch out for yourself. It's a hard life out there."
That he was all for survival because he was gonna get killed. If
exactly.
Not.
You can't blame a man for wanting to live.
No, and then as soon as he could turn the situation in his favor, in their favor, he helped.
Yeah. Right after, you know, ratting out his best friend and all sorts of other stuff. But like,
yeah, ratting out his best friend, leaving a child.
Ultimately, by the end, he was on the right side, so it's okay.
He just let him into a den of wolves, expecting him to die.
Yeah.
So and he's like, oh, dude,
should,
homie, what's good?
Right. We should put out there that in this world we've already sort of mentioned, or you could assume from what we've said about it, shapers do not have it easy or well or any sort of life, kind of, right? So this girl is a shaper. She's been raised essentially on the run by other shapers. It's pretty sad, right? NA doesn't want anything to do with taking on a protege, doesn't want to like bring this girl into the life, but he has to. Clench is like, don't worry about it, and then ultimately just passes the buck. So now NA is stuck raising a girl into a life that he resents and hates.
So what I'm curious about with that is I kind of had a feeling when he got her a gig fixing the kid's god, who was the god was gonna like die, and she had to go in and shape it. I was wondering if what he said was true about like a person without a god has like a spiritually traumatic heart attack and dies, or if he was just saying that to get her to do it.
I would imagine they do, right? Like,
I guess it's the way knowing, he said like, it that made me think it might have been just like bullshitting.
Yeah,
because he like kind of waited to the end to say that.
Well, it basically says like either he's end,
yeah.
He says either he dies or they dump him out in the street because he no longer has a god. Yeah. So he's basically a shaper.
He's
like
don't. He's yeah. like, don't damn him to the life that we have to live. Like the, but if more the best people, thing you can do to the people who treat you like shit is prove that you're more human than them, which was yeah. powerful.
When they treat you like an animal, be more human than them.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
The living well is the best revenge, but a way fucking cooler way of saying it. I love yeah. that line a lot.
Yeah. This book is definitely very much, I feel like, countercultural scene and pretty like, you know, it's pretty about treat everyone the same no matter how they are. Because, I mean, there besides just the shapers, there's also the squares, which are definitely an allusion to, you know, the queer community and LGBTQ community.
This was very LGBTQ. They don't get into too much, positive. But
I imagine probably is how they treat. Definitely, yeah. A lot of Spurrier's work is definitely all, you know, all one. It's all worked together, which is why I like his work so much. But I would say that they touch on a lot of those issues, and he does it in such a unique way. Like his world building, which I love, is all of his stories of such, you know, unique worlds that are built. Like in this, they have a character named Desdemona, who we only see in flashbacks, but she kind of connects all the characters in the story. That's why he kind of feels obliged to take Sal, Dinah. Because she was originally... Yeah, there is Dinah. She is wants attention. Adorable. Little kitty.
she's like your little god.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So what I liked was, or I thought was interesting, is that it opens up and they don't tell you anything about like how the world was created or like the rules of the world. They just kind of throw you in and like have you figure it out. I mean, they kind of like the first issue is kind of like a little bit of a crash course of like how this world operates, but it's kind of just like through the storytelling that they do it.
Yeah, he gives you just little hints, even to the end. Like he just kind of has you make up your own mind, which is another writing tool I love. We'll get into a little bit. So Bud is the only god that can wander without a human, and there's a lot of hints. So there's basically like the society of, I don't know what you'd call them. I call them kind of scientists that were involved in the creation of Bud. And they can also bond people to shapers that are this like secret society group that's after Bud. And they kind of gets involved with them in the later half of the book. So Bud's very unique. He's like one of the most powerful gods. He doesn't need a human. And we get various hints. The reason he wears a hat is because he has an infinity symbol on his head, where I guess most gods have a counter, right? Where it says like how much time they have left, but his is infinite.
I thought it would survive on his own. Yeah,
like how many beads they have.
It's how many beads they have is what the counter says. And he doesn't need beads. He has infinite power, pretty much. Like that's why he can survive on his own.
So they have a flashback of a guy with white eyes, a bunch of math, a bunch of religious and spiritual symbols, and then also like the people that chase shapers and kill them, who basically look like KKK members. And Chaz, so this is what we get. We get this, and then we get a hint at the end where it's a guy, it looks like a human body covered in a white, like, what you put over a corpse?
Yeah.
A white sheet. And then you see, like, other flashbacks. And basically, the leader of this scientific society is trying to use the knowledge to kind of control NA. And he decides it's not worth it because he doesn't care where Bud comes from because he loves him anyway, so it doesn't matter. But Chaz, you said you have an idea of what Bud is.
Yeah. So a lot of the parallels to the beatnik movement of this book, right, is like, what do they call it? Damn it, I gotta pull it up. It's something about like religious pop, basically, right? And at one point, N.A. and Bud have to hide out in this Church of Small Gods, and the Church of Small Gods priest is getting his orders from old technology by these people that we meet later in the book, right? So my thought was that Bud is like a created deity of all of the like belief that the Church of the Small Gods generates. So like each town might have one of these churches where like only small gods are let in, because that shows like you're not big, you're not flashy, you just do whatever it takes, right? And Bud has that infinity counter, which means that he's just constantly getting this energy, kind of, right? It's almost like Spawn. Spawn had a counter at the beginning, you remember that? And every time he used his powers, it counted down, and when it got to zero, he'd fucking die. Except they found a way later that was like, oh, but by the way, I won't die now. I have infinity powers. So like
the little green counter, I remember.
Yeah, so like Bud essentially has one of those set to infinity. And how do you get to infinity? You just have that idle, open prayer to a small god. Bud, we never see assume a bigger form. He's free. He's not tied to anybody. And he just exists. And he's this big, you know?
Yeah. So he's in a complete state.
I thought he was the small god in question of the church of small gods.
I think you're right. I mean, they definitely, it looks like they may have created him from a human though. You guys are getting that vibe, right? I mean, I'm guessing
he's like the man fucking with the white philosopher stone.
He's like under the sheet. Yeah.
They're like,
in that first flashback, we see that guy and he has Bud's face.
Yeah.
Like you see a human face and he has Bud's eye and Bud's nose.
You could reach too deep into a god, we find out shapers can. And when you do, you touch whatever that god's memories are. And at one point, Sal says, I could see Bud's brain. And we get to see those memories and some weird, cool, Illuminati looking Full Metal Alchemist. Fucking
yeah, I love all like the crazy transmutation, you know what I circles mean? With like these fucking symbols all over them, and they never like really explain it. It just looks sick as fuck. and he goes,
it's when cool
he,
as hell to drop.
And when like his brain is inside of Bud, he's like, your mind is all stars and numbers, and then like he's gonna stop being a mech, and he's like, no, let me stay, no, stop.
He's basically like an ayahuasca trip. Yeah,
he's got like that ayahuasca Bud's keyed brain. Him
to well, the girl does it first on accident. Sal accidentally touches his brain and starts seeing that those flashes, and is like, "What's going on?"
It's like when you pick your nose too deep and you accidentally scratch your brain. You know, we've all been there.
Yes. So there's also, we talked about it a little bit. There's a mob, like a Chicago-style mob, that's after N.A. because they want him to be their shaper. And originally they wanted Desdemona to do it, but she was unfortunately captured by a mob of the angry shaper haters.
Before that, though, they did want N.A. to do it. And he said, I don't hurt people for money because they want to use them to, like, torture their gods to get money out of them.
Yeah.
So he's like, I cannot take this job. And they're like, you better watch out. And then they get somebody else, and it turns out to be Desdemona, right?
Yeah, and then they're going back after N.A. And Benatti, who's the guy that brought up the rosary beads that Chaz was talking about, he has his god hide inside him. It's kind of creepy. His eyes turn yellow, and then it comes out of him like a shadow. And he's kind of one of the bad guys. I would say him and just society itself and that science society are kind of the main antagonists that are chasing N.A. throughout the book.
And he's just like a chill homie trying to live his life. And also what got me is the warehouse douchebag. He says shapers got no style, and I'm looking at N.A. and I'm like, damn, look at this guy. Look at his fit. Look at that sick ass hat. Like, sick ass jacket. How can you say this guy doesn't got style? He's like totally got that bohemian fabulous look.
Yeah, he's rocking it. Wearing the girl earrings.
Oh, and, yeah, dude.
Putting on the like, makeup too.
The gold hoops and lipstick and the whole shebang. Glitter.
That's one thing I really do enjoy about this. I just read a book, which I was telling them really, that similar Void Trip, which we'll talk about eventually, by Ryan O'Sullivan, which does the same thing where it takes like a counterculture tale and does it in a unique way. Whereas Void Trip is space, and this, it's kind of fantastical, but still just kind of telling a really counterculture tale with like a beating heart. It reminds me of like Beatnik stories and stuff like that. About, I mean, basically, I think a lot of the moral of it is not to judge others, and also, you know, because I feel like he's not really comfortable with him being himself because, you know, he's so chased until that end chapter where he kind of does his huge performance and his solo and stuff, where he's really just kind of like, announcing I am a shaper and telling the whole Cantic Society about it. So I feel like that's him finally kind of being like, I'm okay with who I am.
Yeah. And then yeah, it really definitely. Sucks that nobody else is okay with who he is. His fans are like, we're yeah, not but the your point fans. Is and they start like chasing him out. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I think the no. point is how you feel about yourself. It doesn't matter about the other
oh,
people.
Oh, totally.
Well, he definitely awesome. Takes yeah. it. He takes it pretty rough.
yeah.
His reaction in a lot of these sequences, too, is pretty great. Like, there's a scene where they find out some big critical piece of information from Smudge, and he's just really excited that he has a groupie, that she's been to every show, like, watching him and keeping tabs, and then finally, like, we got to do this thing, and the whole time she's laying it
you
all
gotta
out,
watch
he's
out
like,
for them, man.
I have a groupie! and it's just awesome.
And then he, like, immediately sleeps with her.
yeah. A few times they all thought that Sal was asleep every yeah. time. That was my favorite part. like, oops. that wasn't what I was asking about.
And that's not like, even what she was not. Asking. yeah, she just yeah. like let the cat out of the bag there.
yeah.
Good shit.
But yeah, I was really hoping that they were going to respond a lot more positively to him being a shaper. Like, because they're so necessary. And this book makes a real true point about, like, they're really necessary, but they can't, you know, they don't want to recognize it, I guess. You know? It's fucked.
Sorry, I got really distracted.
Oh, by Michael's but, background?
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. yeah. It's That's pretty.
So, wait, what did you just
it's
say?
It's pretty tough.
okay, so the guy with the invisible god. Do we ever. Yeah. I don't remember ever seeing his god do anything. Do you think he just doesn't have. He's a shaper and just isn't admitting it?
That's what I thought at first. But then when it pops out,
I don't think we ever
it turns
see
out
it,
that it's
we?
Just been oh. like. Yeah, it comes out and it's his shadow. It's like a real like
oh,
Shikamaru
cool.
style fucking
shadow stitching jutsu
guy.
yeah.
yeah. Except like it's got like these gold eyes. It's sick as hell.
That's fucking sick. I don't know how I missed that. I kind of had to like rush through
cool.
a little bit of it.
Yeah, it's longer than a lot of stories now are 5 issues, but this is a little bit older, so it's like the original 6 issues. Like I remember when all miniseries were 6 issues, and then it changed to 5, and some are 4. I remember when they were all 4 too. Chaz, you remember this?
Yeah.
Remember when all miniseries were 4 issues, like when we were younger.
It's kind of nice. I don't have to pay attention for too terribly long.
It is nice. I enjoy that about Seeds, the book I'm reading right now by Anna Senti and David Aja, which looks beautiful and it's 4 issues. I started yesterday, barely had time to read, and I'm almost done with it now. It's nice.
Yeah.
And I got the full scope of the story. This is perfect, I think, for 6 issues, though. Honestly, this story could have gotten more. I think, which Jack, you'll see with the other Spurrier's work, he can do a lot with like a small amount.
Yeah, like, I'm excited. With his Hellblazer. Is Spurrier mostly an indie writer?
He does DC work and Marvel work now, but he started out just indie. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see like the contrast between his work for the different peeps.
It seems like they give him they don't really give him much restriction because he has a Black Knight series coming out now and I'm really excited about it. I'm sure Chaz probably read this solo, but it's insane that Marvel let him do what he's doing. His take on the character of the Black Knight is he's just insane.
Yeah.
He's like a crazy guy talking to himself, which I love, but it was not what I was expecting, especially from Marvel.
It's pretty cool. I'm excited to see what his ongoing is going to be like, or mini's going to be like, sorry.
No, yeah, me too. What was weird is like Black Knight is a character I loved as a kid because he used to be in the Avengers when I was young, but really no one's done anything with him for like, what, 10 years? Maybe longer?
He was a part, I think, of the Secret Invasion was like a long time ago in real time, sorry, in comic book time it feels like yesterday.
It does. In real world time it was like 13 or 14 years ago.
fuck. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
13 years ago.
Anyways, he was in some of those, like the, I think he was in the Captain Britain and MI-13 stuff. Like, I think he joins up after a certain part. Cause that shit was awesome. When that was coming out, it was cool as hell. But that's beside the point. But I'm pretty certain he gets in there because there's a character that gets Excalibur and then she's got to get trained by the Black Knight. Becomes like his squire. It's cool as fuck.
That sounds sick. And I'm super stoked to dig into Spurrier more.
Yeah, all of his work is really interesting, but it has a really indie vibe all the way through. Like his I'm a huge Hellblazer fan, and his Hellblazer run is so good. I'm so excited for you to read that.
When are we going to cover
12
that?
12 issues are perfect. That's our finale for Spurrier. It's the last book we cover.
Oh, awesome. I can't wait to read it.
We just wrapped up, yeah, in December. Yeah, it's really good. His style, I know I don't want to give too much of God Shaper, but it's so weird that his style vastly is different with each tale. Like all the books we're going to cover, Coda's probably the most similar to Godshaper because it's kind of set in a fantastical world. It's about, you know, beings with powers. It's mostly about a man and his horse, which is, I'm going to keep on saying it's a story about a man and his horse.
Makes it sound like a Witcher story. It's Geralt and Roach.
The horse is way more important. But it's similar in Coda, I feel like. But
I need to read the Witcher graphic novel, actually, if like, well, my sister got it, but she was going to loan it to me. Have you read that?
Yeah, you should. I haven't read it, but I'm sure it's good.
Yeah, I've read it a little bit.
I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, evidently the books are really boring. I wanted to read them, but I decided against it. The novels.
It's all Polish, baby.
Yeah.
It's that Polish.
It's like fucking Hunch. It's like their goddamn fucking Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones? Yeah, it is. But to get back on track with it is, so we find out Bud's powerful, and then we meet this science society who basically kidnaps N.A. when they're basically all on the run, and they briefly connect him to a god, which he has for a little bit, so he can peer into Peggy Slim, because their whole mission is to take down Peggy Slim, who's like the leader of the Cantic Society. She was cool, too. She had like almost Diana Ross vibes
no,
for me.
No, wait,
like younger Diana
she's
Ross.
The leader of the opposite. She's the other side of it.
She's not Cantic?
No.
I missed that?
Yeah, she's like the pop instead of the Cantic. She's the like prayer pop or whatever they call it.
I am completely... Queen of the Holy Harmonies. You're
yeah.
The founder of the Salt Lake City Happy Hymnal Foundation. I don't know why I thought that. Rock-a-baby pop.
Because they're
rock,
doing
darling,
stuff that we
America.
Would expect from Cantics, which we find out. That's what yeah. they really wanted was to expose her, steal the bead.
Because she's living that hobo life almost, yeah.
Yeah, she's doing what makes her happy because she's a celebrity. And that's what celebrities do,
yeah.
whatever they want.
yeah.
Better not True. Let fame go to our heads because I'll get insufferable.
Yeah, I feel the same way. So that kind of leads to our final confrontation of the club where Peggy Slim's performing, where he kind of outs them and then does his big performance, but he outs them incorrectly because he originally thinks that she's married to a shaper.
Bum, bum,
that's
bum.
Actually not what's happening.
That's
yeah,
illegal.
He basically is like, you're married to a shaper. Jerry Springer comes out and he's like, we got her.
And then Maury comes out and says, actually, that's a lie.
Can we go on a Maury tangent? I just remember a few years ago that Maury Povich had a girl that was trying to find out the father of her child, and they tested like 400 people, and none of them are right. I don't know if they ever found the father of the child, but I remember that was something he was doing.
Part of me hopes not, because that's a mystery that needs to be protected forever. Like,
why would you bring your child and yourself on that show and bring 400 men up?
My favorite part is that the kids never know. They're just sitting in the green room like... While the camera's on him and the whole crowd's like, oh. And then the dad's picture's shown and they're all like, it looks just like him. Look at the nose. And then the mom's like, you better look at this. Look at him. He looks just like him.
And then it comes up and it's not the dad.
No, not at all. Not even
so
close.
So you know what would be sick? It's like, It would be super dope to see like an animated series of God Shaper, just like a mini series. So specifically, so that I could hear the music.
Yeah,
yeah.
This would have a great
soundtrack.
I imagine
it would be fucking dope. Like even just like the little bit of like, I guess it's not really even lyrics, just like poetry or like him addressing the audience was pretty like heartfelt and, you know, hits you right there.
It really does.
Yeah.
When NA has his speeches, they're great.
That spoken word.
I would love to hear
beforehand.
His music.
Yeah. That'd be pretty
using
cool.
Bud's power to make a guitar. Like just hear the crazy music that's coming from that. Like, do Little Prince or Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, totally.
I could see that. That was a pretty wild.
So,
good save by Bud becoming a guitar. what a
yeah.
shape.
Yeah, but Bud, I just want to see animated too. I can imagine.
Yeah,
he's
like a little jelly
voice.
Blob man. He's like a little skeleton ghost jelly blob.
Amazon, if you're listening to this, you're doing a lot of comic book properties, but only actually putting some out. I mean, they've saying they've been going to do East and West now for 6 years, and that doesn't seem like that's ever going to come out. But
we're finally getting Invincible. Yeah, that took like 10 years,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it did. It took a long time.
So East
to
West,
we have time
no
now. Yeah. I'd almost like East to West to be an anime-style animated series more than live action because I'm just worried. They did that Dark... Ow, kitty. They did the Dark Tower series. They did like half the season and they never released it. They filmed like a new series and then they just scrapped it halfway through production, which...
They just totally fucking
must have been bad because that's...
I'd kind of want...
Well, I mean, that's throwing away, like, $50 million, so
I'd want
to be a reason.
East to West in that, like, Netflix anime style. You know what I mean? Like...
yeah, like Castlevania?
Yeah, or even, like, Great Pretender, or
yeah.
how that Pacific Rim anime looks. Like, that'd be pretty sick.
You know that Netflix is making a
out.
Resident Evil anime?
Fucking finally.
And they're... They're making a Blade Runner anime too. Or I think it's Netflix. It might be Amazon.
Whoever's making
Netflix.
It,
I'm fucking stoked. I love everything Blade Runner.
No, me too.
Blade Runner 2049 is such a good movie.
The Android's Dream of Electric Sheep is like one of my favorite books I've ever read. I'm a huge Philip K. Dick fan.
I think, yeah. Philip K. Dick was the original acid head that like took too much ayahuasca and acid and started talking to aliens.
A Scanner Darkly is like one of my fucking favorite books I've ever read.
That's amazing.
And
he totally did
kick ass too, even though it gets some hate.
When we one day do Matt Kent, you're going to love it, Jack, because there's a character in all of his books in Dark Horse called Philip Verve, and it's just Philip K. Dick.
That's
and he literally
sick.
Looks like Philip K. Dick, and he
so
exists
dumb.
In every reality. So, like, all these stories are taking place in different realities, and every single reality has a verb. So he's, like, the connecting piece of all these realities. So it'd be, like, every reality has a Philip K. Dick.
That's
some he's
awesome,
dead, some he's alive,
dude.
But he's in, like, every
so
story.
Loud.
Yeah, and Kent is so good at... Don't want to get into Kent too much, but he's so good because he never even tries to explain it. He just pops up in a story and he's like, you either get it or you don't. You've read my other stuff, you'll know who this guy is. If you don't, he'll be a new character to you. No worries. Because he popped up in that spy one and was like the main character. And it was, I think it's the first time I've seen Matt not draw Verve. I think mostly it's usually the books he draws himself. But if you're a Dick
yeah.
fan, he literally has a story in it where Philip K. Dick said an alien satellite talked to him. And message him a bunch of information from the future. I don't know if you've heard that story, but he was on a lot of substances during this period of time in his life.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think either he did talk to an alien or...
I think it was like Valis.
He did too much acid.
Valis? Like, what was it? I thought it was something. It's got a cool name. Where is it? I can find this.
And
that's like the main plot of the spy book. You can find it. It's
Valis.
On Wikipedia.
Yeah.
View it.
Yeah.
Valis.
Sick.
But,
I'm going to look that up for sure. So where were we?
No, God Shaper's great. We're at the big ending.
It's
they call
great.
The Vespers. Vespers is like mob justice. All the gods join in depending on how righteous your cause. The stronger your god, the stronger gods that hear the call. So... they're outing.
They're like rogue gods, the two, though, right? Or not rogue pop necessarily, star. But
no, they're just overtaken by the like. Oh, they need this. I gotta go help them.
Oh, okay.
And that help is to tear them apart and distribute their beads to other people or whatever. So they're outed as being a married couple of a shaper and a regular person, and that's not good, but doesn't turn out to be that at all. Instead, they've fused their gods in what seems to be a even bigger sin against this world than being a shaper.
Yeah, no fusing gods. It just seemed like they'd almost rather act like he was a shaper than for them to find that out.
Yeah. Which is weird, because so much of what they do with their gods is, like, transactional, right? Like, buying things or selling things or making things, right? Like, you would think fusing your gods as a form of, like, a marriage contract, like marriage already is like a union of property and everything else. You think fusing your god would be like the norm when you got married. It would show like the commitment to each other, but it's not the case.
Yeah, I agree. You think that, no, maybe when this society progresses, it'll be the norm.
Maybe. I don't know.
Who knows?
Maybe. Marriage will always just be a big contract.
Legalized robosexuality, the merged god
looks
right?
Badass, though.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a huge dragon.
Yeah, it's sick.
When they merge the two gods, yeah.
And then they get real tiny afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, they get real small.
We also...
And then basically leads to... Go ahead.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, we find out that the person that fused their two gods together was Desdemona, who had run off from this crime family to do something for love. Which was fusing the two gods. She's the only person skilled enough to do it and willing to do it, because since it's such a taboo, we find that out earlier when Clench, in retaliation for not getting paid in kind for his work as a shaper, fuses the mayor and his mistress's gods together and runs them up a flagpole. That was pretty great. And that's the reason that Desdemona is killed, is for doing this thing, for running off. So in a way, NA rights the wrongs of that whole situation by freeing these people from hiding what they've done, right? He's liberated them with a little, in true style.
Yeah, he does, with a little bit of help of Clench coming in clutch and turning good again, and Sal, they take the invisible power from Benatti and give it to Peggy Slim and her husband, which makes it so they can live a normal life.
Yeah.
And be free by their god becoming invisible.
Well, by looking like shapers, right? Like, there's no way that she continues to be like the queen of pop in a world where everybody learned that she fused a god together. Like, it would just look like she lost her god or something, and then she'd have to be like, well, it sucks. I guess we'll have to trade clothes. I'm bad at shaping, though, so it might not work.
Approve of like the fusion. Like, if she is like, no, no, I didn't lose it, I just fused it. Like,
her fans turn on her so fast too. It's awful. Like, they're like, even early on there, they say like, I prefer when her god was in a pink or whatever, was red, and then they're like, you're such a poser. It's only cool when it's purple. And then they find out it's a fused god, and they're like, that's gross. I can't believe Peggy would do that. Not our Peggy.
Yeah.
Fame. What you gonna do? Gotta always Fame. Chase it.
Yeah.
Gotta always
chase it. I love when he goes into his big speech with a guitar solo. All the words are great. Listen to papers. They won't report it, but I'll get it out. There won't be no recording because everyone's god was too busy, but I'll get out the word, the beat. And he just kind of goes on this huge tangent and does a huge performance and ripping down the taken. Like, Jack, as he said, a ragged, rude, sexy, sly, angry, artless, delicious, devastating thing when he creates that huge storm of Vespers.
Yeah, totally.
Which it looks like there's that scene with all the gods. I don't know if he's just, I think he's just pushing all the gods that are in there with the people. Yeah, I love that. That's when Clench falls like back in love with them. His eyes turn all hearts with smudge. And he's like, I never knew.
They both turn into like, holy shit, we love this man.
Yeah.
Good old Clench. Always going to come out on top. He's a real Mac from It's Always Sunny. I'm playing both sides so that I'll always win. Like, no, Clench, you're just being a jerk.
I imagine the end of this, they're in a, you know, a polyamorous relationship. N.A., Smudge, and Clench.
N.A. is not going to get tied down. No. No, sir.
No, he's going to be out there. Yeah. He's going to be out there going in bathrooms with random people
Just chasing his bliss. That's how I like.
Yeah.
The best part of this book for me was the ending. There's a moment where, like, in exchange for Bud, all of the answers that you want about all of the weird mysteries from that room, old technology, electricity maybe, who's under the sheet, what's all the whatever, I could tell you all of that if you just trade me. And then the, like, nah, I'm going to San Francisco. I want to put on a big show for, like, my bros here for helping me out.
Yeah,
later. Like, at first I was so mad because it's like, okay, so you do have answers? And then I realized, like, no, Cy Spurrier probably doesn't have answers. This is just cool. It just serves this story. And now that story is just going to continue. He's just going to keep doing what he wants. Yeah, like... I don't need
it's
it.
It's
kind of
cool not having an answer.
I think it's kind of him also realizing that he's free to do what he wants as a shaper, regardless of the prejudice and stuff. Like that whole speech where he says, I just want to play the crazy, sexy show up in San Fran, my friends. I don't care about any of that. And then he goes, the things you love, the things you can touch, to see and pin down, the things you can count and control and own, they ain't worth a damn compared to the shit without a shape. Like, just, you know, talking about he's not... As much as he's not accepted by society, he's also not tied down or imprisoned by society's, you know, ideas, morals. He doesn't have to get a normal job. He's free to go and just be free, like Chaz is saying, chase the bliss.
Yeah.
So, I mean, regardless of the prejudice, he's also way more free than anyone else we meet in the story.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's not life, that bad a life in
even,
some
yeah,
regards.
Even that science lady, she's controlled by just trying to capture Bud and control people. With this technology she has. They have the epic alchemy Dr. Manhattan scene too, where it's hinting at what Bud can really be. And I love that he's, as you said, just like, fuck it. I don't care about any of that.
Yeah. We're going to keep pulling scams on people. That's the Bud I know. And that's the Bud I care about.
This story for me really, so when I was like younger and I still want to be a writer, but I was really influenced by Kerouac and Kesey and all these people. And as a kid, like, some of my friends were into it, but it didn't seem like it was that influential. But reading this and Void Trip and a lot of stuff, it's nice to see that the Beatniks had such an influence on people worldwide. Because Spurrier's not even from America, and this is a very American story. Which even does say something is un-American earlier in the story, N.A., but for a British writer, it's a very American Beatnik spirit, which it's nice to see that these older stories have really touched people in a massive way. I will say, though, quick thing is the Kesey estate now owns all Ken Kesey stuff, and I wanted to get a copy of Sometimes a Great Notion because I read it years ago and mine kind of got crappy, and their paperback's $30.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's like a weird thing I've noticed since his children took over that they charge. It's just a paperback book.
Yeah.
And it's like a 300-page story, and it's $35.99 at Barnes & Noble. I'm like, what?
Ooh, that's like, a little high.
I mean, it's won a ton of awards, but yeah, that's... I mean, I wish I could sell a book and then ride around a bus all year off these book sales.
You gotta get that digital library.
I love the
app.
Keys. I'm just
and then just check it out.
It's not as good as the physical.
No, never.
I know
is,
you both know that.
And better than $35, I'll tell you that.
I just know it was way cheaper when I was a kid, but I mean, Kesey's been dead before I was an adult. Like, he died when I was real young, so I mean, I must have purchased it before and it was just cheaper. I mean, our society's going up also. I don't know if it's really the Kesey estate or it's the Kesey estate also with Bantam, the people that publish it. I think it's probably has to do with both because they both have to get their cut, I assume. The people that are allowing the publishing and then... But that's a great book. I don't know if you guys have ever read it. It's about an Oregon logging family, but it's really good and also has a lot of the same spirit as this. As is One Floor of the Cuckoo's Nest, On the Road... All those books.
Fucking love those books, man.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy how much influence they've done. I mean, they basically created the Grateful Dead, and they're all these people are still influencing people today. Like they're influencing all people that, like Cy Spurrier,
who's, you know, changed the world.
Yeah, it did. I mean, a lot of the progressive ideas we have today that are more normal are things that they kind of started, which I think is kind of this, once again, the spirit of this book is, you know, accept everyone for how they are, love yourself. As I always say at the end of the episodes, I think that's a huge portion of it also. Kind of him, I mean, I think N.A. may know the entire time that he doesn't need to live by these people's ideals and he's already free, but it's almost his speech to the audience of like all these, you know, turmoil you see him go through that it doesn't really affect him at all.
Yeah, and he really goes through it. Like, yeah. It's rough for him. It's no easy life being a no-gotty.
No. But as then at the end, he says there's nothing better than it, basically. Yeah. No matter what you think, the best thing to be is a no-gotty. Because, once again, he's free. Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be stuck chasing people, trying to force them against his will. I mean, so many people in this are... That's a lot of what they're doing, because even with the science person and Benatti, it's basically chasing people and forcing them what to do, which in society, I think that's what society does to most people. Because, I mean, I feel like if you work, you do something for a passion. Like, I'd love to work in comics. I'd feel good. Besides that, you work because you have to survive. I feel like a lot of times most people just because where they are in life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly. You have to get money, so you get stuck in doing something you hate just to survive, then you're controlled by money.
I'm godless IRL, and I'm free.
I mean, I am too, but you got to pay for stuff. And until I get rich, I'm going to have to probably do a lot of jobs I don't love because, you know, I got to support myself and my family and got to live and survive. And that means you got to do stuff you wouldn't normally want to do or even go out to do, but the money controls you.
I meant in a more like philosophical regard.
No, paganism is awesome, dude. It's making a comeback, too. A lot of books I've read recently have paganism stuff in it, which is cool. Which they got completely, not get into it, this being another podcast, but the Christian church, or Catholic church originally, completely screwed the pagans. They took all their holidays, moved them a little bit, and then slaughtered them and chased them down. They're like, we're the good guys.
St. Patrick's Day this month, so maybe we should mention that St. Patrick's Day is actually super fucked up because you're celebrating St. Peter driving the snakes out of Ireland, but those snakes, that's actually just symbolic for the crusaders slaughtering the shamans in Ireland.
No, man. That's when I get drunk to forget it.
Snakes were their sacred animal. I used to always bring it up
on St. Patrick's
Anyway,
Day.
Let's continue. Yeah. I don't want to get on this rant.
Yeah. Let's not get too dark here.
Yeah. But happy St. Patrick's Day. I think we should rename St. Patrick's Day Beer Day and rename Thanksgiving Food Day and just not celebrate the slaughter of people.
We can call it Thanksgiving Fat Day and St. Patrick's Day Cirrhosis Day.
Yeah, brilliant. I'm about it.
I mean, it would be good. I feel like I love holidays. I love gathering with people, but a lot of American holidays are founded on awful things.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's an Irish holiday, too.
A massacre of the native people who took in the pilgrims. And then, yeah, of course, St. Patrick's Day was the shaman. So I think we should just redub them, not get rid of them, but like reassociate. Yeah,
not to get too liberal, but that's because of people like Kesey and Kerouac. And, you know, the Merry Pranksters and Grateful Dead is more of these progressive ideas are now ingrained in our culture all over the world. So we're way better than we were 40 years ago. 40 years ago, people would think, you know, we took the country because, you know, it basically expansion. My dad said that to me once because that's kind of what hippie. He basically, I forget what he said, but he basically like conquest. Like we conquered the natives, so it's our land. And I'm like, that's fucked up though. Like, what do you
think? Manifest destiny, baby. We needed it.
St. Patrick's Day, I have Irish and Native American blood. So that's like both slaughter of my people, my ancestors.
I mean, I have Irish. I don't have Native American, but I mean, my grandfather's family was Polish Jews and moved to America to run from Nazis. So I definitely understand
totally.
Persecution.
You get it. But let's move on from this like we should have earlier.
Anyway, that's a moral of the story is be happy with who you are. And I think that's kind of N.A.'s experience. It's a great, it's an older Spurrier book. It's like 3 or 4 years old. And it's a good gateway into kind of his ideals and his morals we're going to see. He's wickedly funny, Jack. You're going to see that with a lot of his books. Black Knight's one of his funniest, but even in Hellblazer, he's funny. And I really can't wait to read Alienated. That's going to blow your mind because of how It's like taking the YA concept, like the first issue, like, oh, this is going to be a cute YA tale about these three friends finding an alien. And the alien's really cute. And then it takes the idea of E.T. and like morphs it into a fucked up tale about social media and about the youth today.
I'm about it.
And it's just it's completely like the first issue. And I was reading when we were waiting for Willow to be born. I was like, okay, this is okay. And by issue three, I was like, this is so good. Like, this is such, I don't know how he tricked Boom into printing this. I wonder if they had the full script because it just does so many twists and turns. You're like, oh my God, this story is fucked up and dark, but also kind of funny in ways and having a good, I think a good message of where people are today when kind of the disconnection that social media brings, which I've noticed now, which he used to be on social media all the time, but he hasn't been on Twitter for like 6 months now. I still can tag him. We love you, Simon, but it looks like he's kind of staying away from the Twitter, which I can understand. It can be toxic.
Social media in general, I try and really stay disconnected, but, you know, obviously because of the podcast and because of my music, I have to some degree. Feed into the machine.
I feel you.
So where were we on?
Yeah, I feel like I'm slacking
on
off.
This book.
We were at the end. So yeah. I was just talking about the moral.
Yeah, because we keep going in these rants. I figured.
He rides off in the sunset. Basically, we're at that part with his band of merry travelers.
Yeah, on to San Francisco. I kind of wish we got
to worry
see
in the world.
Make it there, but you know, it's nice to leave it to the imagination too.
Yeah, or maybe Spurrier picks it up in 10 years. I mean, it's an indie book, so I'm sure he can.
I guess I wouldn't mind
Boom's
that.
Not completely indie. No, I wouldn't either.
That'd be pretty sick.
He's getting bigger and bigger as a writer.
So we got any announcements or anything?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, we have a big month. Our next episode is going to be another special one. We have Kevin Rodatelli and Rob Cannon from Freak Show coming. I mean, from Freak Snow coming on. I've done that so many times. I love the book, but it's so easy for my tongue to say Freak Show. And I'm like, no, it's Freak Snow.
What have you ever said Freak Snow before?
That, right? It's like a two-word tongue twister.
Yeah.
Freak.
Chaz, you
freak
recommended
snow
the book,
is
and
coming.
I'm so glad you did.
Yeah.
If I had read that before the top books of 2020, that would have been high on my list.
Yeah, I mean, we're dropping that so Friday, but I'm excited to record it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm super excited to meet. Kevin's been messaging us. He's a huge fan of the show, which is always nice to see creator support, but he couldn't reach out to us and was kind of, he felt humbled that we loved his book so much, or
makes
me and Chaz were
done it,
and we gave you and Blake the copies. Yeah, and I didn't know he's a music video director, which I just found out yesterday, which I guess we'll talk about him more tomorrow. I didn't know that either, but now I want to see all the music videos he's made. Because by watching Freak Snow, I mean reading Freak Snow, I'm like, this guy's music videos are probably insane. Like, I can only imagine how trippy and psychedelic they are, which Freak Snow is so psychedelic. It's like an acid DMT bath. Like, and I don't think he's really hiding it. Yeah, I know. I don't think he's hiding it. The sequel series, which we just announced, we'll talk about it tomorrow. By the way, since he's coming on tomorrow, they also announced a new Behemoth imprint called Happy Tank Comics, which Rob and Kevin are actually curating, which originally he was supposed to announce it later, but he announced it. Yeah, and he's going to talk about that a lot with us and about all the books they're coming out for Happy Tank, which I'm excited about. So we've been teasing something for the last month and a half, and we can finally announce it now because in 2 weeks, you're going to be able to listen to it. But we have the very special pleasure of Ram V., is coming on to talk to us about his books, his bibliography, and his newest books, Radio Apocalypse, The Swamp Thing, and The Many Deaths of Layla Starr. This is the most excited I've been to meet a creator. I love all the creators that have come to our show, but Ram's one of my favorite writers.
Yeah, baby.
I'm going to admit, a little nervous.
Ram himself, the legend.
A little nervous. The legend. He's our first creator we covered, and he's coming on, which I can only hope this paves the way for some of the other creators we cover coming on in the future. But super excited about it. So we're going to talk to him about his new books. We're also going to talk about his first two books, which were Black Mamba and Paradiso, which are definitely really cool. Paradiso reminds me of Logan's Run meets Wizard of Oz, which sounds weird, but that's what it reminds me of. And Black Mamba is so good. It's like short stories about a day-to-day work of an Indian detective, and it's like horribly dark about the shit detectives have to, you know, confront. And then also like really funny. He does such a good, and that's like the first thing he ever wrote and got published. So I mean, seeing his work in that, because he's so deep and so dark, which you kind of see in Blue and Green and his other works, but it'll go from that mode to like you want to laugh your ass off. So it goes from like these huge transitions of like, oh my god, that's fucked up, to then wanting to laugh not necessarily stuff you want to laugh at, but the way he does it is just really well done. And it actually, which is interesting, all the artists on it are all the artists that work now on all the other What Is White Noise books. It's got the colorist from Giga draws one of the stories. The artist from The Picture of Everything Else is one of the artists on it. So, and of course, Aditya letters it because
Aditya's,
you know,
the man.
The hardest working letter in comics.
Is the man. He really is. I forgot he even did Department of Truth, and I was like, oh.
Dude, Shreds.
He does so many of my favorite
books.
He
does it all by hand, too, huh?
Yeah.
So, yeah, fuck it, Ram. What's the date again?
We will be releasing it on the 24th of March.
Hell yeah.
Tune in,
so,
peeps.
Guys, keep look out for that. Blake wasn't feeling too good today, so he took the night off. But he'll be back tomorrow. He'll be back for the Friday episode and he'll be chatting with us, Kevin and Rob. As always, I'm Poet Air, also known as Michael. You can find me on Twitter at PoetAir33. You can find the show at Outside The with a zero. And then where can they find you guys?
You can find me on Twitter at Chaz Simons.
You can find me at Twitter at sin_aesthetics with an X. And you can find me on Instagram at sin_aesthetic and Facebook at sinaesthetic. And I got some tunes on SoundCloud at sinaesthetic. And I'm on TikTok.
They're real
sin-aesthetic.
Good.
Everywhere.
Your latest tracks have been really blowing my mind. They're really good.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm going to drop a new one soon. Probably.
You got to not make so many private ones, though, because then I can't like them when they're private.
Well, it's just like release schedule. It's like for promotion purposes and stuff.
Okay,
and some of the stuff I send you is waiting for vocalists.
Well, let me know when I can like it, because when you send me and I love it and then I can't like it, I feel like a dick. Because I feel
it's
like
all good.
I'm going to give you the support.
I just give you previews of a lot of stuff early. I'm gonna drop, I think, the bubble grunge pot bubble what was it opalescent bubble grunge this weekend, the rhythm,
awesome,
the 8-bit dungeon rhythm.
I can't wait till you go and see you play. That'll be
good,
man. Maybe
it's
at a con sometime
fucking
soon.
Corona,
we'll get a booth,
dude.
Yeah, well, they do the after party here at that comic book nerd bar, so
yeah,
hopefully
they do, usually
by
do
the time
those.
Corona's over, we can get a booth here. And then we can do an after show with you.
There's
playing.
There's always a ton of after parties for the cons. So when those come back too, like maybe we can make it happen.
Let's all go get vaccinated, folks. That's to you out there. Let's get this herd
y'all,
immunity
y'all
going.
Y'all aren't even down for Fear and Loathing in San Diego, though.
We're definitely going to Fear and Loathe in San Diego.
Oh, fuck yeah, man.
Come see us when we're doing our best Hunter S. Thompson impressions in San Diego.
We can call it an impression.
As always, guys, be good to yourselves, be good to others, always fear and loathe a little bit just so you enjoy yourself. And Chaz,
turn the page and wash your hands.
Have a great night, everyone.